Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 143 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include September 27th at the Tacoma Comedy Club in Tacoma, Washington, October 18th at The Virgil in Los Angeles, and October 25th at Union Hall in Brooklyn. But today, we've got a show recorded May 6th, 2015 at The Rendezvous. This is round two featuring John Ozalay, Emmett Montgomery, Alicia Sanchez, and Travis Vogt reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions. First, you'll hear them draw topics, then we will fast forward into the future to hear the finished pieces. Enjoy.
Do we happen to have any Tom Waits fans in the house tonight? Woo! Dear Pat House 4, it was a hot night in Sheboygan. I pitched a tent up by the railroad tracks and thumbed it into town to find some company. Her name was Lucille. She was tall for a dwarf. She had one flipper hand, a milky eye, and a full back tattoo of a stillborn calf. In other words, she was perfect. I found her down by the wharf like all good women. Without a word, I approached her and handed over a $20 bill and half of a liverwurst sandwich that I'd stolen that day from the Five and Dime. She nodded it hungrily as she led me to her place. Lucille and I climbed the rickety stairs to her cold water flat. There were roaches on the floor and dishes in the sink, and there were baby clothes, but no other sign of a baby. An old man with two wooden legs sat in the corner, strumming a cigar box guitar. He likes to watch, she said. As a rat scurried across my feet, the whole place smelled like someone had expressed an old hound dog's anal glands into a rusty bucket of squid chum. I'd never been more turned on. I undid my overalls as Lucille pulled out her tits from the top of her burlap dress. It looked like something a gypsy would get buried in. I think she made it herself, but I didn't have the heart to ask. Also, Lucille's cleft palate and forked tongue made her speech so garbled that conversing was nearly impossible. But that was okay by me. We weren't there to talk. Lucille slapped at my balls with her flipper hand, like a trained seal at a low-rent traveling circus. My old man used to say, son, eating a hooker's pussy is like painting someone else's barn. But I was never much for poetry. I laid Lucille down on what I now realized wasn't a bed at all, but a stack of old newspapers covered in a sheet so old and yellowed it looked like it should have the Constitution written on it. I hoisted the dress around her waist. Her gash looked like a possum that got hit by a car. Exactly how I like it. I started slurping away like a hobo eating chili, and she moaned like a war widow. The old man in the corner stopped strumming his guitar. He'd untied his own hobo bindle and was now choking himself with the red bandana. while he worked his gnarled wizard staff of a cock. I paid him no mind, I had work to do. I really got in there like an old alley cat licking the last oily drops from a tin of sardines. My tongue explored every nook and cranny of her musky cram cauldron. And when she finally came, she let out a sound like a cranky old billy goat falling down a flight of stairs. She grabbed me by the hair and mashed my face into her mess like she was house training a disobedient Labrador retriever. Once she'd had her fill, I flipped her over and I pulled her up on her knees. Her butthole winked at me like a priest with a secret. She knew what she wanted. I tried to ease it in, but Lucille liked her ass hammered bone dry. It was like working a butter churn full of old sand, nickels, and zipper teeth. I jammed it in deeper and deeper, and with every thrust, she bellowed louder than a barnyard at birthing season. I couldn't hold off any longer. I pulled out and I dropped a load on her back so big it landed with a slap like a wet mop hitting the deck of an old pirate ship. We both collapsed into a sweaty heap and panted. The old man came to and he began weeping quietly, repeating the name Steven over and over. I didn't ask, it seemed rude. I did pick up his cigar box guitar and play a couple choruses of Buffalo Sally. You all know the words. Anyway, I never saw Lucille again, but every time I eat a bowl of watered down clam chowder, I think about her milky eye. And I tear up like a thing that looks like another thing. Sincerely, Tom Waits. Thank you very much.
All right, great. Thank you for those suggestions. And please welcome your round two comics who will be writing based upon your suggestions. Emmett Montgomery, John Ozalay, Alicia Sanchez, Travis Vogt, and Mark Palm, ladies and gentlemen. Here's how this part works. Let's start with Mr. Travis Bowe. Step up to the mic, Travis. Got your answer, Travis.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm going to draw one suggestion. If Travis likes it, he can take it and run with it. If he doesn't like it, I will draw a second suggestion, and then you guys will vote with your applause on which one he has to write. Don't follow directions very well already. Okay. Judging by the squeal in the audience, your first option is Ben 10. The question is, how much do you want to impress that one person tonight?
What else you got?
Okay. Oh, how much do you want to impress me? Bloom County is your second option. Hold on. I mean, I think I know where this is going, but let's, for the sake of argument, assume the audience has a vote, even though I will throw out Ben 10. My round of applause, who wants to hear Ben 10? Bloom County. Awesome. See, Travis Vogt, keep it going for Mr. Emmett Montgomery. Your first option is the Iron Giants.
Thank you.
All right. Lisa, your first option is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
So if I say no, then I can't have that when you pick the second one?
Well, the audience would get the choice.
Oh, I want the second one.
All right. Your second option is Degrassi Junior High. She's right. Don't fuck this up. Who wants to hear Hitchhiker's Guide? Degrassi Junior High. by Mr. Jono Zalay. Clap your hands for Jono. Jono, your first option is The Secret of Nim.
I'm unfamiliar.
This rat's in it. Does that help?
Oh, sort of.
You want your second one?
Yeah, let's...
Punky Brewster. So, with your applause, who wants to hear Secret of Nim? Punky Brewster. Secret of Nim, Jono Zalay. Take it away. Hey, it's Travis Vogt. Wearing a very Christmassy sweatshirt.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Saving for Christmas when I made this for myself. Just start? Or just go?
Do whatever you want to do.
All right, this one's just for me.
Woo!
The Bloom Beacon, May 6th, 1987. Fuckfest in Milo's Meadow by Milo Bloom. Not one man or animal went unfucked in the dandelion patch yesterday afternoon and on into the night. Steve Dallas reunited with a freshly brought back from the dead Bill the Cat. And as so often happens in the early spring, a coke orgy was destined to follow. Things started off pretty tame as Mr. Dallas and the Cat double-teamed Bobby Harlow, the brunette lady. Mr. Dallas had to perform the lion's share of the hot fuck action, however, because after about 2 minutes of intense pounding and acking, Bill the Cat vomited blood, ejaculated some mysterious orange foam onto Mrs. Harlow's leg, and promptly died again. Lola Granola and Quiche Lorraine showed up because they heard the slapping sounds from several blocks away and wanted a piece of the action. Thank you. What am I going to do with all these babes, Mr. Dallas said without removing the dangling cigarette from his mouth. Reporting for duty, replied Cutter John as he wheeled in with an industrial-grade Vietnam vet erection. Harlow, Granola, and Lorraine, the only known females in Bloom County, took turns bouncing on his exceedingly able boner, screaming in pleasure. This is great, they all squealed in unison, but it could definitely be weirder. Did somebody say weirder? Replied Opus the Penguin, carrying a frilly umbrella with an arrangement of fruit atop his head. It's time everybody sucked on my preposterous penguin cock. Opus unzipped his lower body skin as if it were trousers. And pulled out a massive, throbbing, fully fictional penguin knob. It was shaped like a question mark. A backwards question mark. Like the dot was hovering over the tip. Does that make sense? The ladies, clearly having no idea what to do with this puzzle phallus, sort of licked around the dot. Fortunately, Opus came quick and hard, and soon the meadow was thoroughly coated in a 3-inch layer of sparkly lavender penguin sperm dust. And then he guzzled a jar of pickled herring intestines and went back to bed. Fortunately, Portney the Hedgehog and Hodgepodge the Rabbit and Milktoast the Cockroach showed up to pick up the fuck slack. Crazy animal and insect penises were immediately produced and stroked furtively in anticipation. The three human ladies were looking a little spent, however, but fortunately, Rosebud the Jackalope showed up, pulled out her distended, prehensile jackalope vagina, and started swinging it around over her head. Every horny male got a piece of this purplish abomination. Jackalopes are known to have the most potent of pussies, and it wasn't long before Mr. Dallas, Cutter John, and all of their beboned animal friends ejaculated wildly all over the meadow. And then Bill the Cat came back to life, sucked off and or ate out everybody, vomited blood, and died again. And then Zonker and Duke showed up with boners in hand. Wait a minute, Steve Dallas cried. You guys are from Doonesbury. What's the fucking difference, they replied. And Steve Dallas and Hodgepodge the Fuck Rabbit sucked them off. All the while, I, Milo Bloom, along with Mike Binkley and Oliver Wendell Holmes, looked on in shock from about 15 feet away. And hot as it all was, I'm sure we will all probably be fucked up for life because of it. Thank you guys very much.
Travis Vogt. Rosebud was a bassalope. I want to make that clear. Rosebud was a bassalope, not a jackalope. You are disqualified. He's not. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Who else we got round two? Who's ready? Oh, God, the anticipation. Alicia Sanchez, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, okay. Oh. The sun rises as the sky breaks over Degrassi Junior High. 14 years later, the students of Degrassi The Next Generation begin to file into their first classes of the day. Snake, Claire, Allie, Spinner, all the gang, they're all there somewhere. A young, extremely handsome and good-smelling and big-dicked boy named Jimmy wheels into class and plants himself firmly at his desk. As the teacher begins to take roll, she realizes one student is missing, the new foreign exchange student from Seattle, Washington, in America. Suddenly appears at the classroom doorway. A soft gust of wind blows back her perfectly groomed and showered hair and a sexy title of raw teenage sex appeal. Are you our new student, Alicia Sanchez, the teacher says. Alicia confidently and sexually adjusts her glasses and says yes. Where should I sit? Jimmy has been enthralled. Oh, sorry. Jimmy looks up from the really sensitive yet stereotypically masculine rap lyrics he was writing in his notebook. As he gazes upon Alicia's angelic visage, his dick totally gets hard. You can sit here, he says, with his sexy, pubescent, kind of raspy voice. Alicia walks slowly and mesmerizingly to the open seat next to him. Jimmy looks solemn, disappointed she didn't realize he meant for her to sit on his face. The daily lessons commenced, but Jimmy could not take his eyes off Alicia. Her... her perky, perfectly sized boobs and large mouth. Could she teach him what love truly is, he thought. Before he knew it, the bell had rang and school was out. As Alicia bent over a lot to pick up her books, Jimmy said, hey, if you're not doing anything after school, I could show you around. Show me everything, Alicia said. She took his hand as they wheeled and walked down the empty hallway. What's this room? Alicia asked, pointing at an unlocked janitor's closet. Let's see, Jimmy said with a grin, pushing his wheelchair into her heels with such force she was lifted off her feet and into his lap. The door slammed behind them. Jimmy cupped Alicia's face with his firm, well-manicured hands and kissed her with such a rough tenderness she thought she would squirt in her denim overalls. She unbuttoned his silver tab jeans and maneuvered his dong out of his boxers with the touch of a dick-manipulating master. She dropped her overalls and mounted him on his chair. He let out a super sexy moan in the way that hot dudes do when they're not scared to moan during sexual activity. Silent fucks. Okay. They should call you Moose instead of that guy they call Moose, Alicia said. You have the hottest, fattest pussy I've ever put my dick in, she said. and he gave her an epic pounding she never expected from a 17-year-old, a fellow 17-year-old, because she's also in high school. Yeah. He came so hard, she thought she would fall off his chair and onto the floor. Alicia, Jimmy said, out of breath, "Before now, I have done nothing but regret dumping Ashley after she took ecstasy at that party." "But since I had sex with you, I don't even care about dumping her the second time when she went goth and I wasn't into it." Alicia stood up and attempted to open the door. "Oh no, it's locked," she said. "I guess we'll have to stay in here and fuck for the rest of the night," Jimmy said, giving Alicia a come-hither gesture with a super hot smile on his face. "Okay, Drake," Alicia said, hopping on his lap, where she lived happily ever after.
Alicia Sanchez!
Who else is ready? Mr. Emmett Montgomery.
There he is.
Guys, I have to admit, this was an emotional roller coaster for me writing this piece. I truly love this movie, and I think it's important to present an epic love story. There are a lot of ways I could have went with it. Initially, I went to Vin Diesel post-orgy in his fuck castle. Just loneliness, having untangled his body from all the beautiful people that have sex with him because of the Fast and Furious movies. When he really wants somebody just to love him, because he was the Iron Giant. But he was that voice, and the only reason he agreed to do that movie is because he was taught to love by a robot alien. And that would have been a great story. Then I thought about that young man in Maine, that young boy in Maine, having lost the only true human connection he had, and I thought a direct sequel was the way to go. And so I'm just going to speak from the heart, and here we go. Hogarth Hughes, that's the name of the boy, stared at the Maine sky, his young body swimming in a pleasant exhaustion, but with his head heavy with wistful sadness. The makeshift pillow of his blue jeans and crumpled blanket of Blanche's waitress uniform provided little comfort from sadness. Blanche's pale skin glowed in the moonlight. She slept with a satisfied smile on her face, and her pendulous breast heaved with every breath she took. But Hogarth was empty. He knew he should feel a sense of victory with the coitus that happened tonight. He had finished a feat very few pubescent boys could say they had done. He had made love to everyone in the town. Turns out if your best friend's self-murder teaches the world the futility of war and ushers in an era of peace, it isn't hard to get your dick wet. Hogarth had done it all. Blowjobs from college girls, orgies with the cheer squad, fisting the mayor. But he was lonely. All the bodies he had been inside and had inside him were too warm, too soft. The true caress he wanted was not flesh and bone, but iron and steel. But that was impossible. His best friend, the only thing he could ever love, was shattered by man's atomic-fueled paranoia. His was a sadness that could not be fucked away. A pain that could not be sucked out. He would be forever alone, drowning in a sea of sex juice. This was a lonely island of his own making. When the president asked him what he wanted for saving the world, what his presidential wish was, he planned on saying world peace so he'd seem cool, but that was already happening. So out of his hormone-filled puberty brain, he said, "I want to fuck everybody."
and everybody seemed on board. And it was cool for a while, but eventually hollow. Hogarth looked not at the stars, but at the space between them, because that's how he felt. And this cricket's song seemed to mock him with their community, with their fellowship, reminding him of his own isolation. And here is where we are. And of course, that sky, if this was a true love story of victory, the sky would be filled with a giant metal body. And that cricket song would be silenced, but replaced with machine noises and Vin Diesel's grunting. And he would untangle him from that waitress body. And his penis would feel hope again and rise, extending just a tiny fleshy handshake to that giant metal claw. And what would happen? What would happen, Jewel Box? Love would happen. And that boy would die. That boy would be blasted to death by that strange laser-filled alien robot dick. And is that what you wanted me to write about? When you all cheered when I chose the Iron Giant? I will not tell that story, because that story is in our hearts. And I want you to think about that, of the pummeling that would happen to young Hogarth's body as he finally knew what it was like to be one with something. Because that's all we want. That's all we need, even if the thing we love is originally was a weapon sent to destroy our planet. But turned into the thing that finally made him happy, made him realize he was not alone, and none of us are.
Evan Montgomery. He did not utilize that music stand once. Did spill the beer. Your final competitor, John O'Leary.
I'm just holding it up like a man.
My subject was The Secret of Nim. Yeah. I don't know why I was so against it before. My job before comedy was working with rats in a lab. So not only did I get to describe rat mating behavior, I've seen all of this stuff. So if it sounds weird, that's because it's true. Mrs. Brisby was in dire straits. She may have been a timid field mouse, but the illness of her son Timothy had given her a desperate urgency. She knew she had to get help, and that's what brought her to the underground lair of Nicodemus, the mystical leader of the Rats of Nim. Justin, the captain of the guard, led her in. Hello, I have a request. My son has pneumonia and needs your special healing powers. Nicodemus didn't hear her because he was snorting a line of coke big enough for a prairie dog. At NIM, spoiler alert, NIM stands for National Institute of Mental Health. The drug trials that Nicodemus was in not only gave him neural enhancements, but also an insatiable lust for the ego. As I was saying, I have this sick son. I have this magic amulet called the Stone. It will help your son or whatever because it gives magical power when its wearers are courageous. Because this story has talking rats, so why not? And you're definitely courageous enough for it to work because you've come in here and talked about your sick-ass kid when the whole time you could see my raging hard rat boner. So tell me, Mrs. Brisby, is there a Mr. Brisby? No, he was killed by a dragon. As you should know, because you knew him? Oh, you're that Mrs. Brisby? Janet Brisby? Your dead husband would go on and on about how you never stopped craving mouse cock. And how you'd probably have a big enough vag for some rat dick. There's only one way to find out, she teased. Then she began to wiggle her ears, a sign in rodents that she was proceptive for mating. Nicodemus could smell that her estrous cycle was primed for penetration. She started hopping quickly in different directions, which are called hop darts. They're a jerky mating dance that female rats do when they are hurting for a squirt. Nicodemus leapt into position behind this horny, desperate housewife. Mrs. Brisby wiggled her ear one last time before she engaged in lordosis, the process of lifting her tail when she is ready to receive a fierce pussy pounding. Nicodemus steadied his hard rat wiener, which he maintained despite the Hollywood agent level of coke in his bloodstream. He inserted and repeatedly thrust at a barely visible speed to the naked eye. Picture watching a video of a jackhammer on fast forwards. That is how rapidly rats mate. I've seen it, it's scary and weird. After 25 pumps within 2 seconds, he jumped back into his first intromission, which rats do about 8 times before they come, making them the perfect mammal for gangbanging. Is that all you got? Beckoned Mrs. Brisby. What are you waiting for, boys? Nicodemus called to his colony of rats. Everybody gets a piece. One by one, they slammed their filthy rat penises into her hungry pussy. Unlike rats in the subway, no rodent would hide from this train. Justin, Mr. Ages, even the creepy evil rat Jenner got a taste. Finally, Nicodemus made his way back into position where he was ready to erupt. He blew his load into her so hard that he created a sperm plug, a hardened wall of semen that is evolutionary designed to spackle up the pussy hole, preventing any other potential mates from getting their dirty jizz in one of their rats. But since Nicodemus was still wearing the amulet, he summoned the strength of 40 rats and plowed right through his own sperm plug to come 50 more times. Each of the rats picked up the discarded sperm plugs and started eating them. As they do, I'll remind you, these are rats. Later, Mrs. Brisby gave birth to a litter of rodents so strong you could grow human ears on them. Oh, and also, she got that dumb amulet thing for letting all the rats of Nim fuck her so well. And in a move lazier than Tolkien's eagles, the stone cured Mrs. Brisby's son, Timothy, who went on to have a long, boring life. Until one day when he was scooped up and shoved into Richard Gere's ass, where he died of shame. The end.
Jaws away. Let's get all the round two competitors back out. You all know the routine. I'm going to remind you what everybody read, and then you will be voting, so no voting yet. We started with Travis Vogt with Bloom County, then Alicia Sanchez with Degrassi Junior High, Emmett Montgomery with the Iron Giant, and finally John Lazalay with Secret of NIMH. So, pick a favorite, starting with Travis Vogt, Bloom County. Alicia Sanchez, Degrassi Junior High. All of the girls. I didn't say only the girls, but definitely all of the girls like that. Emmett Montgomery, Iron Giant. And John Lazalay, Secret of NIMH. Real close between Alicia and Jonna. We're going to do a runoff. Can you guys feel the tension? Can you feel it? You feel that fucking tension. All right, so pick just one favorite, starting with Alicia Sanchez, Degrassi Junior High. John Lazalay, Secret of NIMH.
That does it for round two. To hear round one from this show, you can go back and download episode 142. And if you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. For details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.